Film Junkies, welcome to a movie review of a film that came out a few weeks ago and is only actually being shown in London now at Repertory Cinemas. I think you can get to see this film on Shudder, the horror streaming app. But this is Late Night with the Devil. Late Night with the Devil. This is a horror film. It comes from two Australian brothers, Colin Cairns and Cameron. Colin and Cameron Cairns, which kind of reminds me just the neatness of that, of the fact that Talk To Me was made by a couple of, I think they were Australian YouTubers. This is a kitsch demon possession movie. Demon possession movies, they're great, aren't they? This stars, probably the only name that you're going to really know, and you're probably not going to necessarily know the name, but you will certainly know the actor, is David Dasmalchian, who played, what did he play? He played Polka Dot Man in the most recent version of Suicide Squad. He was also in The Boogeyman. He's got a fabulous face. It's incredibly. I think he was also in Dune Part 2. He's in lots of things, often as a supporting actor, but he's the star of the piece. He stars in this. And what does he star as? He stars as a late night or night chat show host in the form of Jack Delroy. I think Johnny Carson. This is a chat show, and this is described or defined as a, yes, demon possession, but it's also a kind of found footage genre film. So the idea behind this film is that essentially, outside of a kind of intro of about 6-7 minutes right at the beginning, setting up the 70s, telling us that the 70s were a dark and twisted time. You don't need to tell any of us that in the UK. We now realise just how dark and twisted the 70s were, all sorts of malevolent forces at work. But this goes to great lengths to kind of set up the, you know, the twisted kind of the Manson murder, you know, all this kind of weird, demonic, satanic and all this kind of stuff. And with part within this, they tell the story of David Dasmalchian's character, Jack Delroy, and his show, and how he's a sort of Hollywood name, and he's trying to be, he never quite wins in the ratings war with the popular shows of the day, so he's aspirant and he wants to succeed, but he never quite gets the success that he feels he deserves in television. But most importantly, he's also the member of a strange grove, he makes visits to the Grove, which is kind of like a Hollywood kind of cult where they do sacrificial stuff in the pine woods and all that kind of malarkey, which speaks to some of the kind of conspiracy theories knocking around Hollywood at the moment. So it's a particular subplot. So it's demon. We've got demon possession coming up. You've got found footage, and so you have this kind of montagey sets the 70s. It's very kitsch. I found the treatment of the footage really nice. I liked all the kind of archival stuff. And then, of course, what the conceit, if you like, of this film is that then the voiceover says, "What we're now going to show you is the final episode that was made with Jack Delroy, played by David Dasmalchian. This was the last show that ever went out. It was a Halloween special. It was a paranormal special." And all these guests came on, and we're now going to show you the film that changed America and changed everything in the world. Important detail, though, right at the beginning there, in that kind of prelude in the build up to his, you know, his potential. Think Anchorman. He's kind of like, he could be big, but he's ascendant, but he doesn't quite get there. He even milks the death of his wife, who's dying from cancer. You know, they have a big, you know, have a ratings bump when he features his wife, who's very much at death's door. But even that's not enough to kind of, you know, get him over the hurdle. He's always second best. He's not quite the best. And so they think, wow, let's go for a paranormal special. And so what we're shown in the structure of the film it exists in, if you like, program parts, with whenever they go to, here's a message from our sponsors, you go to black and white footage of behind the scenes, kind of, this is what happened on set. So it's quite a neat little device. It's quite, you know, it's a conceit. You have to buy into it, because at the end of the day, don't ask questions like, well, who was shooting the black and white stuff in the commercial breaks? And right at the end, it sort of jettisons the idea of the show, and you're sort of thinking, well, hang on a minute, how does this work? So there are some logistical problems with it. But putting those aside, it really goes for the jugular with that whole kind of chintzy, kind of cheesy, kind of mainstream late night chat show shit. You know, you've got the support act in front of the kind of house band, and he does his lines. He was very good. I like that actor. You know, and then you've got this kind of really quite sort of, all the colours are really sort of orange and brown and all that kind of stuff. So you feel like you are. They do a good job of taking you back in time, and so the set design and the production design of the show that they make us think we're watching is very clever. So the era is depicted brilliantly. Production design is fantastic. Music music is brilliant. The sense of camaraderie amongst the crew and cast is fantastic. There's a brilliant exec producer who keeps wandering in the commercial breaks, sort of pushing and pushing and pushing, saying, well, you know, we've got to go for this, and we're getting phone calls of this, and yeah, the ratings are going up, and all that kind of malarkey. But as I say, we've had this moment with his wife earlier, and so this is really, and so you, and with his wife, you've had the first indication of Jack Delroy's sort of naked, burning ambition, his absolute desire for success. And yet, at the same time, what I think David Dastmalchian does a really good job of, he is that sort. It's easy, I think, with the idea of, you know, fame-hungry characters to go for the obvious choices, that, you know, fame, they've gone for it for whatever cost, they therefore become morally bankrupt, and then in horror language and rules, they become fair game to be spliced into 6 million pieces and splattered all over the world. You know, clear, you know, it's like the moment when young hippies have sex or smoke spliff in a slasher movie, you know, they're going to go. And so, you know, a sort of a rabid, blind hunger for fame is another really good reason to kind of kill someone in the most grisly way in a horror film. What they do, which I think is quite successful, and they do something that I think Mia Goth managed to successfully do in Pearl, which is, yeah, she's hungry for fame and this guy's hungry for fame, but they also part within them a humanity. You can see within David Dastmalchian's performance and in his character within the chat show, as the chat show spirals out of control, and believe me, it spirals out of control, you can see parked within him is a shadow of doubt about his own ambition, or is a shadow of doubt or fear and worry and disorientation and dislocation around the Faustian pact. And I think if there's ever been a film that really speaks to the idea of, well, you know, when we say, oh, it's a Faustian pact, essentially you sell your soul to the devil in return for the rewards, this film is really a film, yes, it's demonic possession, but it's a film about the Faustian pact, what the spiritual cost could be if you your pursuit of fame seeks to essentially rinse and exploit the awfulness of what's going on for even your wife if she's dying of cancer. You'll go to any lengths to get the ratings that you want. And so it's good at that. But he doesn't take it. It's not obvious. There's humanity in him. There's fear. There's doubt. There's a kind of, you know, a weird kind of, oh, my God, what have I actually done here? That's within his eyes all the time. So it's a really, really good shout out here for David Dastmalchian. We have a selection of paranormal guests. I mean, some of them, I have to say, I think one of the possible problems with this film is it kind of peaks a bit too early. You know that this is a film, you know that this was a program that was kind of recorded live and put out. So you're constantly snagged by the idea of it can't go so bad so quickly, or things can't go wrong too quickly, because otherwise they would have pulled it off air sooner. So one of the dilemmas in the storytelling of this film is that they've got to keep us believing as the viewer that everyone there would have kept the show going for as long as they did, to the point at which there's no return, if you get what I mean. So that slow build, I was feeling the pressure of that device sort of really kind of, I could feel it early. And so we had this kind of guy who's a seance or a medium. He can pick up the signals of dead people. He picks up someone in the audience. He gets it wrong. Is he a con? He then picks up another signal, and it transpires that it could well be the signal of the wife of Jack Delroy, the guy whose program it is. And so that's cool. You've also got this other guy who's like a hypnotist, who's a naysayer. He just sits on the show saying everyone's a con, everyone's cheating, it's all optical illusions, this is all kind of, you know, this is all kind of funfair nonsense. I found his character a bit annoying. He was a bit too comedic, and he was a bit kind of like the grand, he was a bit like, you know, when you get magicians with a kind of, he was the grand Mephisto or whatever he was. And I found his kind of naysaying, questioning of everything a bit irritating. In fact, I found that it kind of unpicked some of the drama that they managed to build, because the first guy who comes on, the first paranormal guest, who essentially feels he's picking things up, there's a great moment, spoiler, if you haven't seen it, I'm going to spoil it, where he's racked with a headache and there's horrible sounds coming out of him. You feel he's, but something's going on, this is terrible. And black bile just flies out of his mouth and across the studio. It's a great moment. And so he's rushed off. And so this isn't enough to kind of close down the live show. They keep recording, they keep recording. And so we kept going, you know, we kept cutting out of this kind of drama, going to the commercial breaks. We hear that the seance guy, the medium guy, has been sent off to hospital, Mount Sinai, I think in LA or wherever, or possibly, and you know, something awful happens to him. So in the real world, something awful has crept out into the real world. But because the executive producer is so gung-ho going, this is going so well, this is brilliant, he spat black bile across the fucking studio. The ratings are going through the roof upstairs. They're so happy. You've got that whole sort of Anchorman, you know, we'll do whatever it takes to get the right ratings and all that kind of stuff. I tell you, this really began to get stronger at the point that a woman who specialises in, she's a sort of parapsychologist, and she brings in a young woman who's survived, the sole survivor from a satanic cult, who claims to be possessed by the devil. And in fact, the devil has a name. The devil is called Mr. Wriggles, who wriggles and wriggles and wriggles inside her. Now, this girl, the girl who played the demonically possessed young woman, apart from the fact that she was identical to a friend of one of our daughters, which was quite disconcerting because I felt like, God, she didn't tell us she starred in this film. Her and David Dasmalchian are worth the price of the ticket alone. And what we enter into here is some classic kind of demonic possession stuff. You've got voices going, you've got heavy forehead, you know, brow being developed in the middle of a possession. She's strapped to a chair, the chair levitates and all this kind of stuff. Meanwhile, hypnotist man is still screaming, this isn't real, it's all tricks, smoke and mirrors. And of course, as soon as he says it's smoke and mirrors, you know he's going to be destroyed. He's going to be murdered in the most unspeakably horrible way. They even go to the point where there's a scene where the kind of chat show host's kind of sidekick who's in front of the band, they get him to kind of cut open his stomach. He's got a fear of worms. There's all this kind of, you know, hallucinatory stuff. And, you know, it's kind of, you're sort of thinking, well, why aren't they stopping the cameras? This guy's pulling his stomach open and worms are flying out and a big dick-like worm is coming out of his neck. This is awful. And then, of course, it transpires that everyone's been hypnotized. And so naysayer fuckhead over here who you just want to die is just running around going, it's all smoke and mirrors, it's all smoke and mirrors. He manages to say, well, let's have a look at the tapes. So they have a look at the tapes, and when on the tapes, there isn't the worm. So it's like, So again, the filmmakers managed to successfully keep the program going. That's the challenge in this film is, I found myself constantly thinking, how would they have kept the program going? Well, yes, they would have done. When they get to rewatching the tapes, when they say, let's watch the tapes of the demonic possession, it's all as it was. And therein lies the horror of the piece. And so the film kind of rapidly moves through increasing kind of horror. The girl who's possessed with Mr. Wriggles, she loses control. She starts to levitate and all manner of hideous stuff kicks off where naysayer hypnotist guy fabulously gets destroyed. Unfortunately, the poor chap who's the kind of guy who's the sidekick in front of the band, he gets destroyed. The parapsychologist who's been looking after this demonic girl, she gets done. But there are some really, really funny moments in this. There are the way in which it manages to pivot between the horror of what's happening and the never-ending desire to keep giving us adverts from our sponsors. So you'd get really sort of chintzy links into camera, even when bedlam was developing around them. And then towards the end of the show, as most horror films do, they go to great lengths to set up the rules of engagement, the rules of the horror, the rules of what's happening and how this can happen, and the believability of the horror. You've got to have believability to an extent, even if it's utterly unbelievable within its own terms. You've got to make it believable. But then most horror films seem to just jettison with that as everyone gets into a frenzied climactic excitement, don't they? It's like, whoa, this is the moment where it's all just going to splurge everywhere. And this film does exactly that. It splurges absolutely everywhere. And we sort of almost forget or come out of the need to who's turning the cameras on, who's turning the cameras off. It all starts to fucking, everything's blowing up and lightning's flying around the rafters with the camera lights, studio lights and all that kind of stuff. And then suddenly David Dasmalchian is in this kind of nightmarish version of his show. He relives moments with his wife in it. He's then lying alongside his wife. She's begging him to kill her. And of course he sinks a knife into her. And at that point, the camera pulls back and suddenly he's like, oh no, he's been hallucinated and drawn and mesmerized and hypnotized into killing the girl on set. And then suddenly he's basically murdered everyone. And so where did the devil come from? Did the devil come from his wife? Did the devil come from his darkness in the woods, in the pine woods of Hollywood? Is he a dirty dog like that? And so consequently, this really kind of erupts into a real kind of grand guignol studio, TV studio hellhole of horror. I think I've made it sound really good. It's great. It's serviceable. It's funny. David Asmalshian holds it, really is the kind of thread throughout that really holds it together. And he does a sterling job of making us believe that he is hosting this total kind of out, totally out of control, all over the place kind of show. It creaks at the edges of its own conceit. You can forgive it, that. That's fine. I do think what it suffered with was it had to hold back on the awfulness. So you got terrible moments, but, you know, like the bile and like the worms coming out of the stomach as an hallucination, right then through to the kind of demonic possession scene where the chair levitates. It had to graduate the horror. And in graduating the horror, I felt it needed something more terrifying and more sinister at the front. And I felt that the whole film perhaps missed a few more potential David Lynchian kind of just unsettling details. I'll give you a small example, which they didn't follow through on, or I don't think they did, though. Maybe it's an Easter egg, and maybe someone with really kind of keen eyes will go, oh, no, what that was. Like, if, for instance, in the audience, all the audience are dressed as kind of, you know, for Halloween. There was a guy dressed as a skeleton, and they kind of hovered over that character or that person in the audience for almost what felt too long, like we should make a note of that because it's going to come back, and he never did. And I just felt that there could have been, I felt there needed to be some other sinister aspect to the audience in the room that could have made this whole thing even more sort of sinister. It wasn't sinister enough, and yet it was dealing with really sinister topics and the sinister thing. You don't get more sinister than demonic possession, do you? I have to say, the girl who was possessed was hysterical. Her ability to keep looking at the camera. There's one moment where David Asmalshian is trying to take, well, not trying, he's taking the show to the next commercial break. He's looking over her shoulder and she just turns around because she's got no awareness of cameras and where she shouldn't be looking. And she's just grinning like mad into the camera. So I saw this at the Prince Charles Cinema with a whole bunch of kind of cult film lovers. Lots of hysteria, lots of laughter. I think this is becoming one of those films already that has a really kind of cult following. So there's a lot to enjoy in this. It'll be a fabulous night out on a Friday. Go and see it. And as I say, it blows up, it goes up its own arsehole in the end. And why not? It's fun. And I think, again, David Asmalshian has to be given a shout out. He keeps the whole thing kind of strung together he keeps it cohesive. If the lead actor wasn't so strong, I think it would have all just spiraled off into stupid directions. All of that said, I would say, well, as I say, this is as much a statement on the desire for fame as it is a clever horror film. I think go in with that as a thought, and I think you might enjoy it even more. A lot of vim and vigour to it, a lot of energy to it. And again, I like the, you can when I found out there was an Aussie duo at the helm of this, I was like, yeah, they don't mind taking risks. And in taking risks, some are going to hit and some are going to fail. If I was to score this, I'd give it about 73 out of 100. And I'd fully recommend going to check it out. If you're a horror fan, you've got to check it out.